Welcome to Tips from the Server Room. This podcast is designed for all you systems admins, network specialists, or the guys and gals out there in the office who handles it all. Sit back, relax, grab a beverage, and enjoy Tips from the Server Room. Welcome back, everybody, once again to Tips from the Server Room. This is episode number 37 for March the 4th, 2014. I'm your host, Jack, and I'm going to guide you through this magical environment called our network, our servers, and our infrastructure. And as the opening says there, we are here for all of you systems admins out there, even the accidental admins. You know you folks. You know, because... When I first started with one school I was working at, a private school, they had an accountant, one of the payroll people, and she was kind of taught a little bit about running the server and how to add users and make file shares, and she did a pretty good job of it, a really, really good job of it, and I have to commend her for her efforts. And I'm sure a lot of you out there sitting in your offices right now, or you might be listening to this podcast going, Jack, I am that person. I am that guy or that girl out there that was sat in front of a server, said, you learn everything you can learn because we can't afford IT. And if you can't afford it, how do you use it? That's what I always say. You know, if you can't afford it, you can't afford us, guys. There's tech directors out there and tech people out there that will work for peanuts. Peanuts. I know. We want to make the big bucks. We want to make the $1 million a year. But you know what? It's more important that we spread our services around and help people out there. If you get a chance, please check out my website at tipsfromtheserverroom.com. That's where you can comment on all these shows. My voicemail is starting to be used more and more, that voice line, and that is fantastic. I want to thank you folks out there. But get your questions in here. You have to have questions. If you're listening to this podcast, and I know there's a lot of you listening because I've been watching the numbers. I know, I try not to be one of those numbers guys, but we have to know that we're reaching an audience. And I know I have a big, huge audience out there, and I know you're listening to this podcast, and I know you have questions because, folks, I've been doing this now for somewhere around 27 years, and I have questions. I have to ask every now and then, raise my hand, say, excuse me, I have a question. And remember, there's no dumb questions. Call that voicemail line in your own voice. Use your cell phone. Use your home phone. It's area code 724-701-0550. And from the understanding of it, it's about a minute recording. So if you get cut off, call back in and give me the rest of your thought or your question, and I will put them together and have them up on the show. Again, if you have any questions or future ideas for future shows, you can email me at jackstechcorner@gmail.com. Also, follow me on Twitter. A lot of you have, and thank you very much. Hopefully, you're getting something out of that. You can follow me at Technoman. Here's something new I've been working on now for a couple months anyway. It is my daily blog posts, and I post those at jackstechcorner.com. That's jackstechcorner.com. I post two things, really. Most of it, well, actually maybe even three. Three genres. One is technology, two is photography, and three is technology and education. So I try to put all those together. And I bring you a post each and every day, so sign up for those at jackstechcorner.com and read along with me each day. I had an email a while back that said, Jack, I'm trying to learn more about my network security. I'm trying to learn more about controlling the workstations and controlling the users a little better. And believe me, in a school, we do this. We control our network, and we really try to lock down the desktop because we have a lot of very young hackers on our network, and they want to do something to the computer. Or you want to protect the computers maybe from your users so they don't do something they shouldn't be doing. And that is what group policy is all about. It gives us a very granulated way of controlling the computer or controlling that user to do exactly what we want them to do and keep them on task. Now, at times we did get our servers and our computers locked down a little bit too much. And there's been things on there where somebody said they want to try to adjust the time. And they can't get into it because it says they need admin privileges to adjust the time, which is okay because don't get me wrong, time should be controlled by your server. Your server should be the ultimate timekeeper. And if that server's off, yes, all your other computers are going to be off, but you know you can put it back in sync very easily by setting the server time. But we're not going there tonight, are we? No. Tonight, we're going to be talking about group policies and how to manage your computers. Tonight, I am using a Windows Server 2012 R2 server, but these policies, for the majority of them, will work on Windows Server 2008 R2. Now, why did I say the majority of them? Because, folks, there's stuff built into Windows Server 2012 that will control Windows 8 machines. I had to say it. You knew I was going to go there. And it can control those Windows 8 machines. Have we yet set up a Windows 2012 R2 server in our production environment? No, we have not. We are working towards it. We are leaning towards it. And I may set up one just to be able to control. We only have one Windows 8 computer in our environment. But beside the point, you can definitely control Windows 8 and all of its glory or its unrest, whichever you want to say. So when you first open up Group Policy Manager, I do have it here somewhere. I'm going to bring it up here. And on our Group Policy Management, we are going to go into Administrative Tools. And in Administrative Tools, there is one called GPM. That's Group Policy Management. We're going to double-click it and launch it here. Now, under Group Policy Management, you're going to find your domain name on the left, and it's a tree. Now, what I mean by tree, it's got the little arrows next to it where you click the arrows. Click under Domain and find your domain name. Click the little arrow to pull that tree down, that branch. And directly under there, you're going to find one that says Default Domain Policy. Now, folks, let me tell you something about Default Domain Policy that you need to know. This is very, very critical. Because when you adjust and set anything in the Default Domain Policy, it's going to replicate or propagate, however you want to say it, across all of your other policies. It is the grand poobah, the all-knowing, the all-showing policy. And that policy will allow you to control your computers and your workstations to the fullest. It's a very, very nice way to gather some control. Now, I know you might be saying right now, well, no, Jack, I use a program called Deep Freeze. We used to use a program called Deep Freeze, and if you've never seen it before, I think it's still available. We haven't used it since probably back in the Windows 98 days, maybe even the Windows 2000 days. But what Deep Freeze allowed us to do was it allowed us to take the workstation and freeze it in its proper state. Now, what I mean by that, we have some kids that would go into the Windows systems folder and delete some files. Here's the cool thing about Deep Freeze. When you rebooted the computer, everything was back and it was fine. Here's the downside about Deep Freeze. It takes a lot of configuration, at least the versions we used. It takes a lot of configuration to get to the state where it would unfreeze at night for the updates. Because the computers never remembered getting the updates. So every time you reboot them, it wanted to update, and the update was already there. But remember, when you reboot it, it goes back to the same way that the computer was when you first turned it on. So it's in a frozen state. Get it? Deep Freeze. Pretty cool. Anyway, we're not talking about that. So we decided to go from Deep Freeze to Policies. Because policies I can control. I can let things happen. I can make things not happen. I can make the machine do something. I can make the user do something. And we're going to talk about each one of those, and how you interact with group policy is how the user is going to be interacting with that computer. Very, very important. Another good point to make, I didn't even write this in my show notes actually, is group policy, even if you have 50 Macs linked up to your Active Directory, will do nothing to your Mac. If you want to control your Mac and lock it down and do things with that, you have to have an Apple server. I put the call out there last week. A lot of you might have listened to last week's show. And I said, look, if anybody knows Mac servers, if you know how to run them, if you know how to control them, if you know how to set things up, users, policies, da-da-da, email me at jackstechcorner@gmail.com and get yourself a microphone. Let's do a Skype conversation one night and let's talk about Apple servers and how to control those. I would love to hear from you. And believe me, like I said, I'm always learning and I'm always willing to learn. That's the key to being a technologist. You have to keep your eyes, your ears, and your brain open. That's what we do, folks. You have to let data in to be able to get data out, right? So always keep learning. What we're going to do now, though, is we're going to look at this default domain policy, and we're going to right-click on it. And when you do that, go into Edit. And when you go to Edit, you're going to come into Group Policy Management Editor. And now we're going to go in here. Let me just check my show notes to keep on task. You're going to find two different configurations. There is a computer configuration, and there is a user configuration. They're very, very self-explanatory. Is that right? Let's talk about a couple of differences between those two. The computer policies affect the computer itself. So no matter who logs in there, Jim, Joe, Bob, the CEO, your maintenance staff, in our instance, maybe students, whoever logs into that computer will get that same computer configuration, that same computer policy, because this policy is telling the computer, do this or don't do that. Allow everybody to do this or allow everybody to do that. That is a computer policy. And then we have the next one under there called user configuration. Now, under user configuration, it's very self-explanatory. This is the user policies. The user policies are very simplistic to the fact that the policy controls the user. All right. So let's go for a let's talk about this for just a minute and give you an idea of what I'm talking about, the user policy. So the user policy, let's say that I give the CEO grand poobah policies and he or she's allowed to do anything they want on the network, on any computer they log into. When that user logs into the computer, they pick up whatever policies I give the users. That's a user policy. Now remember that this is the default domain policy. So this is for all users. If we want to control individual users, then we have to create those groups in our group policy management and create policies based on each individual group. And we've talked about at other shows, we've discussed this stuff. If you remember a while back when we set up our server, we talked about the finance group, a maintenance group. We talked about a payroll group, HR group, whatever you have. Each one of those groups can have a group of users. Each group of users can have their own group policy. But remember, we're working on the default domain policy. The default domain policy is the grand poobah. If I set this, all users get this same policy. But the user, the thing different is, any computer this user logs into, they will pick up that policy. So again, let's reiterate on something here. If I have a computer policy, when the computer is first booted up, that computer gets those policies. Here's things we put in our computer policy, and we're going to touch base on some of these different areas. The first one under computer policies that we do is something like set the wallpaper. Everybody's wallpaper in your company could be the same if you want it to be. We set password policies. You can set that on the computer. I tend to set that in the user policy, and we'll look at that in just a minute, but password policies. We can push out software to the computer itself. So if I want a certain software package to load, we're going to talk about that in a minute here, we can load the software through our group policies. Folks, it's a lot easier than taking that disk out there and going PC to PC or workstation to workstation and loading the software. But I still see people doing that, and I don't understand why. The only thing I could drill it down to is they don't understand group policy management. They don't know how to use it. They don't want to take the time, but you need to embrace this thing. Most parts of computers, I've said for decades, is living and breathing things. The only thing the computer doesn't do, I explained this to my daughter the other night, is the computer does exactly what we want it to do. It does not, it's not allowed to think on its own. But when we tell it what to do and we tell it exactly what to do, it does a really, really good job of keeping track of stuff and doing what we want it to do. So if you tell it to do something, it will do it. And that is really key. So group policies are a key and a fact of life, and they're a wonderful fact of life. If you're running a server and you don't have some policy set, why are you running a server? Ask yourself that question. Okay, so now, as I said, user policies affects the user on any computer when they log into any single network. Now, here's something that some people have missed before, and I've done some consulting work, and I've been out, and they said, Jack, how come my password's not set to change? How come my password don't change every 30 days? And I said, let me take a look at it. Well, what happened was their computer was never placed on the domain. You have to join your workstations to your domain forced that you're pushing these policies on. You have to do that. Because a policy, if you just bring a workstation, a laptop in from home and open it up, yeah, you can get internet access. But you're not going to get any policies. You're not going to get any password policies. And that's what was happening to these folks. They were coming in, opening their laptop up, logging onto the computer, like under local users on the computer, with their password. And they said, my password never changes. Well, it's got to be a part of the domain. That's very, very critical. And you have to be able to do that. Put it on the domain itself. Now, there is three main areas under these policies. The three main areas is software settings, Windows settings, and administrative tools. Now, under those policies is different sub-policies that we can work with. Now, a software policy is stuff like I talked about, installing packages onto the computer. Now, when you install a package on the computer, unfortunately, and we tried it, you can't use the setup exe. It just doesn't work. It has to be an MSI package, an MSI file. That is how you actually get those on there. Now, the next security policies is Windows settings. Now, Windows settings control stuff as scripts and security. But if you've been listening to the show well, and if you didn't listen to all the previous podcasts, all the past 36 podcasts, I guess, check out some of those and look for something where we talked about Active Directory. Because in Active Directory is where I put my log on scripts. I don't do a default cross-the-board script. We have scripts based on individual users because we map drives with them, we set printers up with them, and we do different little batch files with those scripts. So I can't have a general cross-the-board script. I just don't want to do that. The administrative templates. Now, the administrative templates allows us to dig into the operations of the computer and set policies and restrictions. If you've ever listened to any of my photography shows, I talk about the meat and potatoes of photography or the meat and potatoes of business. This has to be the meat and potatoes of the technology business and our servers. This has to be it because it allows you to control individual parts of that computer. And we're going to look at some of those. So let me go back to my little Active Directory server here. I'm running a virtual server, actually. Is what I'm working with here tonight. And we're going to go over some of these. So right now, I'm looking at computer configuration. And if I go under policies, the little pull-down menu, there is the ones I just talked about. Software settings, Windows settings, and administrative templates. Now, if I go under software settings, the only thing I see is software installation. Now, if you go to the right in Group Policy Management Editor, and you right-click, you can go to New, and go to New Package. This is where you go and you browse out and look for your packages. Now, here is something you have to know, and I just helped another school out with this. They called, and they had a lot of trouble with their packages going out. they knew they had to send MSI up, and they had the MSI there, and they knew it was ready to go, to be deployed. But anytime a user logged in, it wouldn't load. It wouldn't install the software. It would hang up, and they would get a permission error or something would happen. This is what happened. You have to set a folder up on the server, which I set one up called software. Sometimes I call it distribution, whatever you want to name it. But it has to be a software, a name, to allow you to place these packages in here. Now, under there, I make subfolders, such as Microsoft Office. right now, unfortunately, we still use Office 2007 and 2010. Now, I put those two folders in there. I do my admin install, so I don't have to worry about a key number or any of that stuff coming up. And we do a silent install, so that way I don't have to worry about them clicking on prompts or doing any of that stuff. And I put all those in the folder. Now, here is the key. Under the top directory name, that software folder, I set the properties or the permissions so all domain users can read. That's what they were doing wrong. They set that so only the administrators can read and write to that folder, and they had no other permissions set to it. So when a user logged into it, it tried to install the software, but it couldn't read from the directory to load the program. So make sure you do that. That is really, really key when you're setting this stuff up, when you're doing a deployment. And just walk through it. We're not going to talk about actually how to do an MSI. We'll do that one night in a podcast. I'm sure we'll work on a show for you for that. And there's even ways to build MSI packages. It is sometimes involved and is sometimes a pain in the backside. But this is just an easy way to load software. The next little pull-down menu here is Windows Settings. And we're going to go into Windows Settings. The first one is Name Resolution Policy. It talks different things here about name, policies in the GPO, policy, group policy objects, and you can actually go in here and you can name the prefix, the fully qualified domain name, and you can set all this stuff up in there. And this stuff will get pushed out to your computers and actually put that in there. We don't use this. The next thing I talk to you is about startup and shutdown scripts, and if you double click that, it'll say script. You can add your scripts in there. Click on show files. You can show the files where these scripts are located. You can also, in Windows Server 2012, and I'm not familiar, I'm not really sure if it's in 2008. I'd have to go back and look. But in 2012, there's also PowerShell scripts. So if you're really good at writing PowerShell, you can actually use either or scripts or PowerShell scripts. And folks, we can make these on startup or shutdown. Now, somebody once said, Jack, why would you want a script in shutdown? We wrote a script one time when the computer was shutting down, and all it would do a fast, it could do a fast, let's say a fast scan, maybe, you know, a fast, like a malware scan, like malware bytes or something. You could put something like that in your shutdown script. So it would run as a computer shutting down just to make sure it's clean for when the computer starts up. Now let's talk a little bit about security settings. Security settings, where it says account policies, if you click on account policies, pull that down. The one we talked about before was password policy. People really dislike me when I do password policies. I was just called into a doctor's office I do some consulting with, and they said, Jack, we have this thing called fair use policy that we have to write. And I said, okay, I'll write it. Well, they gave me this stack of papers I had to take home and read. Folks, this was a lot of stuff. I sat and read it. It took me about a week to get through all this stuff that the state regulatory people on medicine, you know, want you to regulate in doctor's offices. And they push us down to doctor's offices, much like any kind of other federal bureaucracy type stuff that I don't always agree with. And I am very mandated in education with it, and I don't agree with it there either. But what they do is they say, look, you must do this, 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 and this, all right? You may be familiar, if you're in the States, and I don't know if it's overseas or not, you may be familiar in the States with something called HIPAA, H-I-P-P-A, HIPAA. And it's basically saying that you're the only one allowed to look at your medical records unless you say somebody else can look at them and da-da-da. Doctors' offices have to abide by HIPAA. They don't have a choice. They have to abide by it. And it's critical that if anybody walks in there from the state, that they are mandated to do this stuff. Well, one thing was, your password must change every 30 days. It must be a length of certain characters. It must remember certain amount of passwords. And, you know, it has to have a minimum age. And it must meet certain complexity requirements. People despise tech guys when they set a complexity requirement. Oh my goodness, I did this at the school and you thought I was cutting their arm off and beating them with their limb. Because this is the thing about this, folks. You have to remember that, and you know, I'm talking to you guys, you are technologists out there listening to this show, and you know, I say I'm preaching to the choir. If a password is doggy one, then doggy two, and doggy three, all lowercase or all uppercase or whatever, it's pretty darn easy to figure that out. It's pretty easy to crack that. But let me tell you what. I set that up, complexity requirements, and now they need an uppercase. They need some kind of punctuation mark and lowercase. It needs to be a mixture of those. And, you know, throw a number in there for good measure. You would have thought that I would have just beat these people up in this doctor's office. And I got very, very bad looks. But you know what? You asked me to do a job. I'm going to do it to the fullest. I'm not taking a job and doing it half-assed, to say anything least. I'm not going to do that. So anyway, that is password requirements. You should set it up. Here's the minimum password requirements that you can use for your office space. This is a really good, just off-the-cuff way of doing it. You should always enforce password history to remember the past three passwords. You should always have a password age of no greater than 90 days. 90 days is fair. Minimum password age is 1 day. That means if they change it, they can't change it back the same day or change it to something else the same day. It has to remain that for 1 day. Minimum password length should be 7 characters. And it must meet the complexity requirement. You should have that checked. I think that's very, very important. So, all right. Anyway, we are moving on here. Let's talk about account lockout policy. This also goes with your password policy, and this just happened to about 650 students of ours. Because they're using these Google Chromebooks, they're not logging onto the domain anymore. So they don't all use Windows computers every day. Maybe they touch them, maybe they don't. So they don't get prompted to repair their password or to redo their password. So what they did was their account locks out because they lock the account lockout duration. I normally will set that. And that is the number of password attempts. The duration is number of minutes. The threshold is the attempts. So if you go to thresholds, and I normally set this to 5 attempts, and reset account lockout counter after so many minutes. So what this is telling you, if you set this up, here's what happens. If I try to log into your account, and I know your name is Ben and Jerry, and I figure your password is probably ice cream, or ice cream 1, ice cream 2, or ice cream 3. Well, I tried it 3 times, now it locks me out. Now the reset account lockout after so many minutes, that'll make you wait, it'll come up and say, now you have to wait for 15 minutes before you try again, or 5, or whatever. If you don't set this, then you as a network administrator have to go back in and unlock that account. So if somebody in the morning is trying their password after having a really good drunken night, and were partying down on a Sunday night, maybe for the Super Bowl or a hockey game, they come in Monday morning, they just can't type their password right, so it locks them out. And then you're going to have to reset it, but if you set this for 5 minutes, it'll just tell them, wait 5 minutes. The other stuff in here is local policies. We have event logs that you can set up, so you can run some event logs or save event logs. And I'm not going to go through all these. You're going to have to go through some of these yourself. But anyway, I want to just touch base on these. And again, remember, when you set it under computer configuration, it is set for the computer itself, not the individual user. Under the last template, this is where we control the meat and the potatoes of the computer. We have things like control panel. And under control panel, personalization, you can force a specific default lock screen image. If you really want to do something, put an image of yourself up there. Then it'll see you every time the screen is locked. Prevent changing the lock image. Prevent changing the start menu background, so you can set that up. Again, some of these are specific to Windows 8. Remember that. So like they talk about the lock screen background, that could be a Windows 8 thing. Force a specific start background. User accounts, apply a default account picture to all users. Now that's pretty nice because you can have one picture, maybe your company logo or whatever you want in there, and that would be the default login picture for all users. Under network, folks, you have a ton of stuff under network, and I would suggest go in here and do this very granulated. Never ever go to your group policy management and think, I want to change a policy to make sure nobody gets into the network control panel. You may have trouble finding it. First thing I would do is do a Google search and you will find out what policy it's under. But be very, very careful with that because it takes, you just start digging and it's really hard to find it. So I do things when I'm setting my policies up. We go through each one and we look at stuff and we look at each policy to see what's under it. And then we start configuring stuff. So you get down to, let's get down to printers, and it talks about here active internet printers, custom support URL in a printer's folder left pane. Very granulated. Servers, we talk about different servers, allow only system backups, disable network as a backup target so they can't back up to your network. And then if you get down to Windows components, you are going to be looking in here for hours, if not days. There's so much stuff under the Windows one that, you know, it's just really crazy. And there's some basic stuff we set on every computer, such as default homepage on Internet Explorer, if you use it. And let me tell you, let's touch base on this a little bit. I know for Firefox, and I'm pretty sure for Google Chrome now, there's a snap-in, a policy snap-in, so you can control those browsers. Because the only thing I always liked about Internet Explorer, when it opens up on our users' workstations, on all the kids' workstations and the teachers, we can do things like we can have a default homepage, and they can't change it. They can change it all day long, and it just keeps going back, and it drives them crazy. But I want you to go a certain place. We can set up a default at the top of ours. Ours has our school name, and it says internet provided by our school name. Up in the menu bar at the very top. So that's pretty cool to do that stuff, and you can set that up in the policies. We go up here. I'm going to close this up because I want to touch base just a few minutes on the user policies. On the user policies, we have pretty much the same stuff. You have software settings where you can install software. I had a technologist call me one time and said, well, Jack, can you explain to me why I want to install software for the user but not on the computer? And so that's a very, very good question. And here is the reason for that. Mainly, if we have, as I said, we have 500 computers, Windows computers on our network. We have 700 devices that we control. 500 of those is Windows. Now, out of those 500, we have roughly 250 of those computers in the, maybe 300 in the elementary center. In the elementary center, they use some software called K through 3 Typing Tutor. They have stuff in there. They have one program they use called Toy Story or Movie Story or Storyboard or whatever it is, but it's for the elementary center. So what we do is we built a security group for elementary kids. We put them all in there. We create their own group policy. And under software installation, we install those programs for those individual children. That way, they don't show up on the computer policies to all my computers because the kids at the high school don't want to see those apps. They don't need them. So this is a very granular way to install applications where I want those apps to go and not just put them on everybody's computer because that's just insane. Under Windows settings, you'll see in here where we have security settings again, and we have software restrictions. or we can restrict certain applications from opening. This saved us a ton of headaches before because we put in things like, for a school, like Tank Commander, Bot Wars, stuff that we didn't want to run. We restricted the software. The kids can double click on all day long and it would not launch. It just wouldn't work. Folder redirections are really good, such as downloads. We can take the folders and we can redirect those. The desktop, we can redirect that stuff. And what I mean by redirect is you, instead of saving to the desktop, when they go to save the desktop, it goes into a folder somewhere else. It drives people nuts, but it keeps the desktops clean. One of my pet peeves is when I sit down the computer screen, I hate to see 9,337 million icons on the desktop. It drives me crazy because I can't find what I want, and like everybody wants to put everything on the desktop. Are we just really, are the users just really that lazy? They don't want to look for it. I think the honest reason is they don't want to have to remember where they put it, right? Wouldn't it be easier if you just wash all your laundry one day and just leave it in the baskets on your bed? You wouldn't have to know what drawer your socks are in. They'll all be in that same basket, right? Makes pretty good sense. Anyway, that's folder redirection. You can redirect it wherever you want to. Again, you have administrative templates and you have a start menu. You got notifications you can do in there. You can turn off calls during certain hours, and you can just do so much with this stuff. Active Directory desktop, we turn that on if you want to control the wallpaper of the screen. The desktop itself, you can enable Active Directory. You can prohibit changes to the desktop. How about that? They can't move icons around. The desktop wallpaper, again, you can configure your wallpaper if you just double click on that. All you got to do is tell it where that wallpaper name is and where it's at. Again, remember, you have to have a shared folder, and that folder has to have read privileges for all your users, or you're going to get some errors, and you're going to be scratching your head saying, what was that? And then you remember this podcast, you'll say, wait, I'll go back to Jack's podcast and listen, and I will figure it out. Shared folders, there's some different shared folder stuff in there we can work with. Start menu, systems again. Control delete options. I was looking at this earlier. Remove change password. If you have a password policy, which we do for the elementary kids, so I think I'll be turning this on actually probably tomorrow. The elementary kids are K through 3 students, all have the same password. Occasionally, you do get a smart little third grader will go in there, click on change password, make it whatever they want, and guess what? They just changed it for the whole class, and that's not good. Remove the lock computer, remove the task manager, remove log off. Well, the only one I really would like to see on there, and I had to look for it before, it was remove shutdown. Because we use a product called N Computers. And when you use an N Computer system, if somebody shuts down the main tower, it shuts down all the workstations. So we had to find out, we did take that off. When we did that, though, we did it as a group policy, and I'm going to show you. I'm going to tell you a little story about how it affects the overall workings of your network. When we did this group policy, we had teachers start calling us with laptops in their classrooms. Well, the kids didn't have a shutdown button on their laptop. So then we had to go back and we had to do it very granulated, and we had to put it only to the computers, not to the user, and lock it down to the individual workstations that was the end computers and not the laptops. So now the laptops can be shut down. So, you know, they were all holding the power button and doing what you would do as a kid. And then under Windows Components, under Windows Components, you have so much stuff in here. Here's like add features to Windows 8.1 preview, which is kind of weird because everything's in production now. I don't know why they have preview in there. Central user configurations, interface, you have tons of stuff there. Desktop Windows Manager, you can manage the desktop. Again, you just have to go through here and play around with this stuff. If you look through here, the Internet Explorer is right here. It has all kinds of stuff. Accelerators. Here, let me just read this for you. Accelerators, administrator-approved controls, application compatibility modes, browser menus, compatibility view, internet control pan, internet settings, offline pages. And then there's a million and one ways to control internet destroyer. So if you're using them on your network, bless you. And I hope you're being safe. But I would not recommend it for anybody, especially the weak at heart. So that should give you a pretty good overview of the actual group policies and how to kind of get in there and manage it. You have to get in there, play with it, folks. That's the key with all this stuff. You have to get in there, dig around. Every time there's a new version that comes out, and, you know, I try to help as much as I can with my server courses if you take those. And especially if you take those and I find new updates, I do update the stuff on there and I add videos all the time. So those will help you to come along. You can listen to this podcast, which I also put this stuff out there to you each and every week and try to help you along with those changes that I find. All right, folks, we're going to wrap here this evening. If you want, first of all, I want to thank everybody out there that's been signing up for my online server courses. They have been going very, very well, and it's amazing to see how many of you out there that enjoy still learning and picking up new ideas. Even if you're a Windows Server Administrator, there's still stuff in there you can pick up and maybe open your mind up again to think about something that maybe you already knew and you forgot. Maybe you want to relearn that. Also remember, if you don't have high-speed internet, I've had a lot of people email me in the past 3 weeks and says, Jack, look, I listen to your podcast, I download them at work and listen to them, but I don't have high-speed internet at home. Is there any way I can get your Windows Server course? Do you have any other way you could deliver that? And I do. I deliver it on DVDs, and you can buy those DVDs at jackstechcorner.com. And I'll just ship it out to you. I usually have next day shipping, and it's on its way to your house. And that way you can pull on your computer and you can watch all those videos that everybody else is watching online, even though you don't have high-speed internet connection at your house. And folks, if you want to learn more and you want to look at those Windows Server courses, we're talking about Windows Server 2008 R2, Windows Server 2012, and VMware ESXi 5.1 Server. And these are from A to Z, from install to administrating. You will be a server administrator when you are done. And best of all, you can install this stuff and set this stuff up. So it's really, really great way to do things. And it's a great way to learn. You can sign up for those at our online courses at tipsfromtheserverroom.com. Just look for the online class link at the top of the page. These courses are very self-paced. You watch a video and you take a quiz. Once you complete the course, you do receive a certificate in the mail. So you can sign up for those today at tipsfromtheserverroom.com. I do have to put it out there to you because my partner asked me today, well, what's the difference between the DVD and the online course? Well, the DVD, first of all, is made for the folks out there. Maybe you just want the DVD to put it in your collection and keep it. I've had people that took the online course and bought the DVD. So they have both means of watching the videos. If you buy a DVD, you don't have the online quizzes, so you don't have to worry about taking the quizzes, and you don't receive a certificate. And that's why the DVDs are slightly cheaper than the online course. So that's how that works. And have a great work week this week, if that's at all possible. And I will talk to you next week here on Tuesday night for another Tips from the Server Room. Sorry, this is a little bit late tonight. Next week, we'll try to get back on track. And if you wanted to catch us on Spreaker.com, or go to tipsfromtheserverroom.com and click on their live radio link at the top, and you can listen to the show live and chat. I'd love to get you in here and talk to you a little bit and see what makes you tick. Take care, everyone. I'll see you next week here on Tips from the Server Room. So long for now. You just listened to Tips from the Server Room with your host, Jack. If you have any questions, please drop me a comment at tipsfromtheserverroom.com. Thanks again for tuning in and downloading the shows. Now sit back, relax, and listen to the remainder of the music. We'll see you next week on Tips from the Server Room. So long.